Awesome.
We'll have to answer that another time.
Okay.
Phil's stalking us.
No, I think the,
are you there?
I think the recording just started in our conversation. So has anybody done anything? Is anyone busy this month?
Hey, guys.
Hi, Phil.
Hey, Phil.
I was talking, but you didn't hear me. I guess I was muted, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Gary, you were about to say something, and then you heard me come in, and you said, well, I guess we'll talk about it later, but you can talk about it now. What was it?
Well, I think it was Kathy. Was it Kathy that asked that question?
Yeah, I was just curious if anyone was busy this month and what they were doing. And
no, no, it was before that. It was before that.
Oh.
Like, I first signed in, and I was muted, and I heard Gary go, oh, I guess we'll have to talk about that later.
No, actually, she said she was. That's what she asked, but then she asked it again when she thought you weren't on. So,
okay.
That's what we were talking about. But
okay, so we're back to.
No, let's go on.
Okay.
We're back to our usual forum, and I get the sense that you guys were not thrilled with going to the webinar, which surprised me. But there was very, very little interaction and very little discussion on the boards. So not only are you a different kind of group than I've ever had, you're a less predictable group than I've ever had. And I really hoped that you would kind of see your place, because I laid out really clearly, I hope, three different levels of where personal trainers can be. And I know that my Be Better Platinum group really responds to this. I know that when I share this at weekend workshops, everybody responds to this. Curious, and I'm looking for honesty here, why you guys didn't.
Well, Phil, if I may speak, I could not get into the conference.
That's a good reason.
I had to listen to it. I don't understand why, but I couldn't get into it all three times.
Okay.
Two times. But I did. I actually thought it was great. I find that I definitely know where I stand within the within the three places. So.
Okay.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, I thought it was great.
Good. Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I couldn't get into the actual computer part. I had to use my phone. But help me understand what level that I need to strive for, where I'm at, where I want to be.
Yeah, see, where this came from is, you know, I've been conducting programs like this for a lot of years, and there are lots of people who went through this program who are super high achievers at this point. And I always try to find simplification so I can teach. And I like to break things down into threes, like the reach, the funnel, the spillover. Or when I first started really building my career, I spoke about synergy, the right nutrition, moderate aerobic exercise, and a concern for muscle. Because when I started studying influence, what I learned is our brain is set up to receive three things. When we first start learning the alphabet, we learn ABC. We first learn to count, we learn 1, 2, 3. We remember the three stooges, but we don't always remember the fourth one who was there, right? So our brain takes threes. Four is a little bit of a stretch. It's not that we can't handle four. It's just automatically we remember three things. So the phoenix and the chrysalis and the thoroughbred. I always like to, if it's possible, break things into three. And when I looked at the highest achievers who came through this program, I saw there was a very consistent escalation. They all started by breaking into a place where they had a promise and an offer, and they started conducting business. And although they started making decent money and they hit that point of sustenance, the frustration they had was they weren't in control of their own time. The other frustration they had were they were limited by the number of hours in a day. So I call that level one. When they evolved past that, they got to a place where they learned to say no. They had enough confidence and a strong enough promise and offer that no longer did they fear, what if I don't have enough clients, and they started to really live their ideal calendar. And I called it level two when they reached a point that they started to do a funnel, so no longer were they reliant on 1 hour of their time for one person, and they also brought in an apprentice. So now they had a business that could generate revenue without their consistent energy input. That was level two. And level three is when they figured out that they can build this to a level that it's replicable. So when they get to a point that they have two trainers working for them and they systemize it. Now they can get to 4, they can get to 8, or they can get to 2 facilities, and that became level 3 where the income is limitless. So it's no better to be a level 3 than a level 1 unless your goal is limitless income, because you can't have limitless income at level 1. It's just not possible. And I thought by laying out that framework, it helps you say, you know what? I'm good at level 1. I never want to have the headache of managing people. I just have to be a strong level 1. I have to develop a sense of saying no. I have to really take control of my calendar, but I'm still a level 1. I'm good with the fact that I am the force that drives money. If you are level 1, though, it is important that you think about the future, because how will you ever leave your business? It's not saleable. You'd have to build up a nice savings. You'd have to really meet with a financial professional to help you set yourself up for retirement. So that's one of the downsides of level 1. But if you enjoy just working with clients, that's okay. Who just joined us? You have some noise in the background. If you can mute, that would be great. Thank you. So that was my intention, is I thought you guys may go, yeah, you know what? I'm at a level 1 and I want to be a level 2. I see what I can do to step up. So nobody's going to know what it means. You don't suddenly get a different shirt that says I'm now a level 3 fitness professional. But just in developing clarity, I thought it might really help you kind of streamline where you are and where you're going. So that was my intention. Is David Jenkins here? David? Looking for David. No, I wanted to talk about something.
I'm here.
Oh, okay, good. Hey, David, we had a brief conversation the other day, and you mentioned something about watching other trainers or seeing other trainers. And I said, you know, that would be a good thing to bring up on the call. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes. Yeah, hey, gang. A little bit of background. My wife has a dear friend of hers who's been a trainer for over 20 years, quite a while, in the L.A. market of all places, and she posts these videos on her Facebook page occasionally, her and a client, and just some of the things she has them doing. I mean, there's no regard for form. I mean, it's amazing she hasn't, like, really hurt anybody, and it just burns my wife up, because she's like, how come she just doesn't learn, you know, proper techniques that she teaches her clients? You know, like, well, babe, I mean, she's just different, you know. She's not me, and so then to make it, I guess, confirmation for me was there's a lady that just opened up a fitness studio in my area. And I was visiting a business next door, and they had an open door, and she was in there with her clients, and she had them doing these funky exercises. You know, basically a variation of a squat with a kettlebell. It wasn't a goblet squat. It was like a weird bicep curl type of squat with a lot of back flexion and extension going on. And I'm like, wow, she's going to blow somebody's back out. And then it hit me. It's just like, man, that's how I'm so different. It's like, you know, my number one thing is really making sure that people know how to exercise safely and effectively. I'm big on form and technique, being safe, core stabilization, all of the good stuff that you all are familiar with. This is amazing. It just seems like the average trainer out there has no concern for core stability, proper form, or anything. And it's just really frustrating. It's like, and these are people that are, you know, that are getting a share of the pie, and it's just frustrating. So, that was
Does anybody here, thank you, David, does anybody here connect with that frustration where you kind of look around and you say, there's somebody who's making money, they have the same job title as I do, people are paying them, and from my perspective, they never even learned to do anything safe, let alone effective. Has anybody experienced that, just that perspective?
Oh, yeah.
Can anybody verbalize how they feel about it? I mean, does it bother you?
Sure it bothers you, because don't people know the difference? I guess not. So, but when they get a good trainer, then they go, oh, my other trainer didn't do that. I'm so glad I found you. So I guess we have to get out there and start showing people what you really need to do, exercise.
Yeah. You know, it should frustrate you. It should annoy you. It should drive you crazy. When we first started, I asked you guys, what makes you angry? This should make you angry. It should.
Yeah.
Because you have gone through not only enough training to pass an exam or a certification or get a degree, but you did it out of concern. Is you weren't looking to be a gunslinger in the Wild West. You were looking to become a professional. And the truth is, and this may hurt, and I know that when I say this in a public forum, people argue with me, and I love the argument. I stand firm in my perspective. This is an industry that doesn't respect professionalism, period. Mm. Now, if I'm presenting this and there's the head of ACSM and the head of NSCA in the room, they argue this with me and they say, well, we're part of the industry. And I say, no, you're the academic part of the industry. But the revenue generating part of the industry, which is in fact what makes it an industry, right? An industry means money is generated. So the consumer part of the industry or the revenue generating part of the industry never asks who you're certified by. So when you go through a certification, they're going to go, well, ours is the best because, or even if you go to a decent workshop, they're going to go get an NSCA or an NASM because. But the consumer doesn't ask. They don't respect professionalism. They don't even know how to ask. And if you just made up four letters and you said STRY, they go, okay, that's your certification? Good. Because they don't even know what they're asking. So we are in an industry where you strive to be a professional when the consumer marketplace doesn't respect the professional, doesn't even know what a professional is. So here's the question. Why should you bother? Well, because you're different than those other trainers. You care. You see things at a higher level. You respect your own profession. So should it really bother you? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Just yesterday, I did a consultation with a 21-year-old girl and her parents. And the mom was carrying this massive binder of all of her records over the past 2 years because they'd been to doctor after doctor after doctor after doctor. And as I looked through it, I knew many of the doctors because she can't lose weight. She's 21 years old. She gained a lot of weight when she first went to college, and she can't lose weight. And they're searching and searching and searching and searching. And the parents are pursuing this medical route. And I think I gave them some real clarity. I'm hoping they really heard what I said yesterday. I'll find out today because I told them to take everything that I suggested. I met with them with a doctor, two of us, and I wanted them to make a decision. We'll see if they make the right decision. But as we spoke about her exercise history, she told me she went to this health club and the trainer gave her a diet and put her on a certain routine where he just took her through machines. And I said, well, did you know what the machine would be, what the routine would be, or did you just show up and the trainer said, now do this one, now do this one? She goes, well, the trainer said, now do this one, now do this one. So there's no real laid out routine. The trainer's going, oh, my 1 o'clock client is here. Let's do this today. The second trainer gave her a different diet. The first one just wrote it out by hand. The second one gave her a printout of a 1,200 calorie diet. Now, this is not even really legal for a personal trainer to give a diet. We can talk to people about nutrition, but we can't give somebody a diet unless there is a license or a credential that says that you're a nutritionist or have some registered dietitian credential. And then she told me about the third one, and it was just an endless array of going to what I would just call amateurs. It's like going to your friend who works out and going, teach me how to work out. So I see it from all angles, and it should upset you. And when I first started really getting annoyed by this, I really felt like it's important for me to take a role in fixing our industry. And I became very aggressive at speaking at the conferences and bringing Dr. Anthony Abbott, who is the academic professional I most respect, to my own conferences and helping people understand. And I would have somebody come talk about the court cases and what could go wrong. And then at a certain point, I don't want to say I got tired, that's not the right word, my eyes opened. And I just realized that it's not going to change. It's not going to change because fitness is such a frivolous pursuit. It's not surgery. So you go to the gym with your buddy and you do a workout. Now you hire a trainer and you do a workout and the trainer is not much different than your buddy. You just assume he has a knowledge. The commercial health club industry will do everything they can to save money on trainer training. So they'll develop their own in-house training. Or they will in fact hire people who have a certification, but there's no ongoing training beyond that. and they fall into habits, and they become like every other trainer there. So when you have a trainer who is charismatic and maybe who is attractive, that trainer becomes the most successful trainer in the gym without any knowledge. I might have told you this, the worst hire ever in my life was a PhD. That was the worst. I've hired hundreds of people over the years. The worst employee I ever had had a PhD. I never had anywhere near the volume of complaints that I got from the people I connected him with, because all he wanted to do was explain things to them. So would they rather work with the PhD who bores them, or the charismatic trainer who doesn't know that much but gets them moving? That's the sad reality. So what I learned to do, what I'm going to ask you guys to do, is flip my perspective. Rather than being frustrated by it, I said, here's opportunity. Because if everyone in our industry was great, then it would be really hard to get to the front of the pack. But if that's our standard, then I have an incredible opportunity to rise above. And my marketing and my language and my message started becoming, they're going to hurt you. Now, that wasn't directly what I said, but I would never interrupt a trainer with a client, although there are many times I felt like I should. But when I would do seminars, I would explain things that I'd see being done in the gym, and I'd go, let me show you why this isn't the way. And then I would say, let me show you why 45 minutes of cardio is going to make you fatter. And then I'd say, let me show you why the machines may do you more harm than good. And when people are coming to my funnel, I'm not saying your trainer sucks, but they're hearing things and they're going, wait a minute, that's exactly what my trainer does. So you've got to be able to leverage this. But you can't leverage it by marketing your credential, because nobody cares. If you say, I am the safest trainer on the planet, nobody cares. That's the truth. They just want a result. It's an emotional decision. So somehow you've got to leverage yourself up. And it's not by putting other trainers down. It's by sharing realities. So David, if you get in the habit of saying to people, if you don't blank to protect your back, in all likelihood, you're going to get injured. You could fill in the blank with whatever you see other trainers doing or not doing. If most of your resistance exercises are in a seated position, your core is going to weaken, you're going to develop an anterior pelvic tilt, and you're going to have back problems in the future. I mean, things like that will get people to go, wait a minute, that's exactly what my trainer does. So let's get frustrated, get annoyed, and then everyone here should go, hey, we're really lucky. Because if that's the standard in the industry, we've got to raise ourselves up. And early on, we spoke about what makes you unique, what makes you different. You guys had a hard time with it. Well, here's a part of what makes you different. You're educated. You're aware. You're concerned. The problem is, if you say, I'm educated, I'm aware, I'm concerned, that's not a selling point. So you've got to leverage that in to what you do. But you need to know that you're different, and you can't just get annoyed. I'm telling you, the charismatic, uneducated personal trainer who can communicate well is going to beat the PhD every single time at marketing, unless that PhD learns to influence, to use Navaka, to have a reach and a funnel and a spillover. And if they learn that, suddenly they have a tremendous edge, because they are, in fact, better than those other trainers. Does that make sense, at least?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Any thoughts on that at all, or any questions?
Hey, Phil, there's a company I hear called Push-Ups to Pin-Ups, and it's phenomenal. Just like you were saying, they work these women out. Some of them get hurt. My chiropractor sees them, but she's opened up 8 locations, and the place is packed all the time. I would love to have a packed place like that all the time, where people are lined up out the street to get into these programs to get results with trainers that just put them through a workout and don't worry about form. But I want to be the one that worries about form and gets results, but not getting people injured.
Well, it's hard to balance those two.
Okay.
And I believe that when personal training was my primary pursuit, I did that. I mean, I had waiting lists and lines of people, and I was selling out seminars with 1,200 seats. But I want you guys to understand that was my message. That, you know, if you're not getting a result, stop. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you join push-ups to pin-ups and you're getting the result you want and you're not getting hurt, then honestly, there's nothing I could say that other than you got what you paid for. Good.
Okay.
But if that's not the case for the majority, then I want to be able to say to those people, stop. And if you and two of your friends suddenly developed a pain in the low back, then kind of wake up and take a look at what's going on. You know, you've got to give them clues.
Mm.
So in music or in business, you know, they call it selling out when you just go after the dollar and you kind of walk away from your integrity to do that. I don't think anyone here could ever do that. And Joe Weider, who was my mentor and the greatest mentor, told me early on, he said, Phil, you could have the greatest product in the world, but if you don't learn to market it, you will fail and go out of business. Conversely, you could have a mediocre product, and if you market it really well, you're going to do well. So that was a part of the challenge of creating a great trainer, a great product, a great protein formula, a great piece of equipment, is now that you've invested the time and the energy and the knowledge, now you still have to invest in marketing it. It's not just because you have something better, people will recognize it. But if you market well, then you'll beat everyone else in the marketplace because you have the quality. So that's what you guys have to learn to do. And that's what I want to say. Some of the trainers who I meet are very bitter because they're very educated and they're annoyed and they go, I can't believe it because at Gold's Gym, these trainers suck and they're not educated and they take steroids, but they get all the clients. Nobody's going to change that. You could only change who knows about you. So if you're bitter, nobody's going to ever come to you. Nobody wants a bitter trainer. So you've got to get really good at the marketing, and that's what I'm giving you is I'm giving you the tools.
Mm-hmm.
So remember what I just told you. You can be the greatest trainer in the world, but if you're not effectively marketing, if you're not influencing, then they're going to go to the other trainers. Tasso, is Tasso here by chance? Tasso, you know, I'm inclined to mention curves, and you have some intimate experience with them right now. Mm-hmm. And what I want to say just as a statement, and then I'll let you add to it, is curves was a true phenomenon, an outlier. Curves was amazing. It was the blue ocean, because while the entire industry was being developed, curves noticed that women are uncomfortable going to health clubs. And I'm going to say it the way it really is, fat women were more uncomfortable going to health clubs. So if there were a place that fat women could go, and forgive me for saying it this way, but we're talking reality, and there's no intimidation, then they'll go there. And that was the phenomenon. But here's the amazing thing. It's a shitty program, and the fat women stay fat women. But for a period of time, it rose up to the height of franchises, not only the fitness industry, the height of franchises because of the appeal, because of the marketing. You won't be intimidated. But I'm telling you this, in terms of delivering results, it was a shitty product. Tasso, you want to pick it up from there? Either following on what I said, or you're free to challenge or disagree.
Well, I agree 100% with you. We just got involved in that realm of educating those curves women from the curves that went out of business. And what I had to do was gently talk to them about what their program was doing and why it was failing them. And I went through teaching them about body mass and how body mass changes. You know, we started with only the first class I did. I had 6 in. Tomorrow I'm going to have 19 in it because the word's getting out about the education. So these women are coming over to us now and starting to look at us because the first thing I did is I showed them what their image is of the fitness industry. And I said, this is not us. And I use the same education I use when a person comes that wants to be a trainer with me is we're not about the bodybuilding. We're not about all this stuff here for aesthetics. We're about reversing chronic disease. And so that's the whole conversation with them, to get them to venture out from the little safe haven we gave them of their facility and sort of educate them why that has not worked for them.
So that's the reality of the industry we're in, that we like to talk about results, but the successful companies that market results well will do well even if they don't deliver results. And the same is true for trainers. So can you be a trainer without a knowledge of safety? Yeah. And can you make money? Yeah. And is there anybody regulating it? No. So to get angry and bitter will harm you. To recognize it as a reality and use it for leverage is powerful. And what happened is Tasso just acquired a Curves, and he bought it from the woman who was just done with it. She had it for years. It's certainly not at the top of the franchise game anymore. They're not profitable like they used to be. They don't have a price tag like they used to. Many have folded. And interestingly, he's meeting the members, and it's exactly what I said. These are women who showed up because there's the safety factor. They're not going to be intimidated, but they're not getting a result. So this is the kind of insane reality, because purchase decisions are made by emotion. And now we're heading into the time of year where the emotion is going to be the highest of any other time of year. So David pointing out that the state of the industry is a very, very low barrier of entry, a very, very low requirement in terms of true knowledge, a very, very low standard of professionalism. We choose to rise above it, and for that you deserve a pat on the back, but you don't deserve a lot of money. You deserve a lot of money if you're going to master the influence and the delivery of the result. Then you deserve a lot of money. So it doesn't help to stay in that place of being bitter, but it certainly helps you to recognize it and go, I'm better than that. Now I have a job to do. I have to let people know I'm better than that, because if they don't know, they don't know, and that's the truth. So when I spoke about the three levels, I said what changes from level to level is value perception and the strength of your promise and the strength of your offer. So if you're going to recognize the state of the industry being low, if you're going to recognize that the great majority of products sold in the next 90 days because they're coming off of that holiday weight gain will fail people, then it's time for you to really structure a strong promise and a strong offer. When I first asked you guys to start connecting with people, and it, you know, the first part of that process is what should I say, and you get nervous, and then hopefully you have the experience where you meet a woman walking out of a building and you're talking and she's interested, and then you go, hey, you know what, talking to people really helps, and you start to strike up conversations and it gets a little easier and you get better at it. And when you really master it is when you have a strong promise and offer. So touch, compel, capture, thrill. Touch is the meeting five people a day or whatever you're using as your reach. That's the touch. Compel is getting them to go, really, you can do that for me? Or, wow, that's how it works? Or, I'm really interested. Or, that's how she lost the weight? Or, you used to be like me? Or, you help people like me get what I want? That's compelled when they start to ask those questions, not out loud, in their head. And that's the time you make your promise, when they are compelled. Now, a level one promise is an exchange of time for money. That's a level one promise. I will train you for 45 minutes for $35, or I will train you for an hour for $100. That's the promise. A level two promise is, I'm going to show you how to get that result and make sure that you start losing weight immediately. That's a level two promise. Now, some of you hear that and you cringe. You go, I would never say that, because what if they don't eat the way I tell them to? What if they don't stick to it? That's a gap between level one and level two. Level two trainers develop that confidence. They feel a greater control. They feel that they have greater influence ability. They're not so intimidated by the what ifs. So when you really become masterful at touch, compel, capture, thrill, and you have a strong promise and offer, You can drum up business anytime you want, as much as you want, regardless of what other trainers do. So if you believe that, then right now it is worth some time coming up with a promise that just comes out of your mouth because it just flows, because it's comfortable, because you believe in it, because you're confident, and because when you compel somebody, you believe they should respond to your promise. Is there anybody here who feels comfortable enough with their promise to articulate it, or even uncomfortable enough and willing to just kind of work on it a little bit?
Oh, Phil.
Yeah.
This is Gary.
Gary.
I feel pretty comfortable.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, I was thinking about sending an email out to my list, aside from meeting people and making the same offer, saying that, asking them if they knew anybody who had any form of chronic disease, and I would be a little bit more specific with that. And if so, I didn't figure out how I was going to say it yet, but I would address it in a way where I can help them improve, even reverse the chronic disease. All you have to do is just come in, take the first step, something like that.
Okay. I'm not talking about an email, though. You're talking about sort of a marketing hook, and that's not what I'm talking about. The promise should be something that you're willing to articulate if your friend introduces you to their uncle, or if you meet somebody at the checkout line and they go, well, tell me how I work with you, or you have somebody who's compelled. It should be something consistent that you are willing to say that gets people to say, is this worth my investment? They have to weigh out. You're going to make a promise, and in their mind, they're going to weigh out, am I willing to pay money for this? So if you're at a bicycle store, you say, I will sell you a bicycle that will get you from point A to point B, that will go fast when you need it to, and the gears will change easily. Okay, that's the promise. And then you decide. You know, is it worth it? And then you might ask questions. You might go, well, is it a mountain bike? No, not a mountain bike. Okay, I'm not interested. So if your promise is, I will help you reverse your chronic disease, that's a good promise. But I don't want you to pigeonhole it and go, well, this will be my promise for the email. I want it to be, what is the promise that Gary's so comfortable with that it shows up in an email, a conversation, he says it in his sleep if he needs to. So if, for example, here'd be an example. I have worked with hundreds of people, and don't say this unless it's true. I have worked with hundreds of people with chronic disease, and in the great majority of cases, I have helped them reverse their disease, okay? So this is what's compelling them. Then they go, oh, really? That's what you do? So now they're compelled. My promise is, work with me for 4 sessions, and I will make sure that you have the 4 most important steps to get yourself back toward health. That could be a promise. Right? And then they start to weigh out, is that important to me? You know, or come to my orientation Tuesday night and you're going to learn the things that your doctor never told you, one of them being diabetes is reversible. Okay, that's a promise. Do this and I will do that for you. Do you guys understand, or are you still confused about what I mean by the promise?
No, it makes sense. It's thanks for clearing that up.
Okay, good. So this is what I want you guys to think about. As we're heading toward New Year's, create that for yourself so you can do this easily. And if this is getting you to retreat, then you got to push yourself forward because this is basic. I'm telling you, if you're going to be frustrated by other trainers who are not as good as you making money that you deserve, and you're not willing to start by making some sort of promise, then you're really going to be stuck.
Hey, Phil.
Yeah.
Phil, this is David again. Hey, that was a great example with the unwell market, someone with chronic disease. But what if I guess I would need help on how do you steer that towards someone that's reasonably fit. I know, you know, that's the smaller slice of the triangle that fit the unfit market, but someone that's going to Orange Theory thinking that they're really going to get the results they want by, you know, staying in the orange zone or whatever their whole hook is, and they're happy with it because friends are raving about it, and they're just kind of doing Orange Theory because of Me Too. And so for them, chronic disease may or may not be on their radar yet.
Right. No. Chronic disease. Listen, guys, I've spoken about chronic disease frequently only because it has been the most opportune market I've ever seen. But that doesn't mean everyone here should be focusing on chronic disease. Gary brought it up in this case. So, Dave, if you're going after a more mainstream market, the fit and the near fit, that's fine. Let's forget chronic disease. Don't even make it a part of the conversation. But there's an important prerequisite to the promise. They've got to be compelled. So if you're asking me, what do you say to somebody who's happy at Orange Theory? I don't know. Because there's no, you don't have them compelled yet. There's got to be something. You can't make the promise if they're not yet compelled, right? So if I meet somebody and I go, hey, where do you work out? And they go, Orange Theory. And I go, how's that working for you? And they go, great. And I go, oh, listen, I'm going to show you how to get fit in four simple sessions. They're not even interested because they're already happy, right? So I've got to get them compelled first. I have to have enough of a conversation where I go, well, tell me what you're getting at Orange Theory. And they go, oh, I managed to work out three times a week and my energy's better. And I go, oh, good. And that's what you wanted, an increase in energy? Well, I really wanted to lose weight. Oh, have you lost weight? Well, I lost like 6 pounds. Okay, how much did you want to lose? 20. Really? And how long have you been stuck at that 6 point? Well, probably about 6 months. See, now I have an opportunity to compel them. Like, I've got to find that need first. If you remember Navaka, you've got to get the need first. So the promise can only be made effectively after they are compelled. Okay, so go ahead. Now you can complete your question.
Okay. And I'm sorry, actually my call dropped probably right when you started answering the question, so I didn't
really
hear. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it sucked.
Go ahead, ask your question.
Well, it was just that is, you know, how do we, I guess, craft our offer, if you will, to, you know, to that market. Not saying that that's our avatar, but I mean, if that's more than likely you'll run into.
David, what will you do for somebody in that marketplace that Orange Theory won't?
I'll get them results.
What results? Orange Theory gets them results.
Well, I guess specifically increase in lean muscle mass, stronger core, stronger body. If they have a desire to reduce their body fat, we'll make that happen as well. If they want increased energy, we'll make that happen. So that would be the difference. Now, I mean, will Orange Theory try to say that they can do that as well? Perhaps. But you and I know what they don't know is that, yeah, they may lose weight quicker, but they're using mostly water weight. So
I would look a little closer to Orange Theory before you say that, because Orange Theory will absolutely improve energy in everybody who does it regularly. There's no question.
Right. Okay.
It's formulaic. They're not random workouts. Ellen Latham worked very, very hard to develop metabolic formulas, so they will absolutely increase energy. Will they lose weight if that's the goal? Sure. And will some of it be fat? Yeah. We can't say it's all water weight. Orange Theory, however, does not have a nutritional component. So the great majority of people who join Orange Theory will not really be able to develop what we might call a truly lean physique, unless they're sort of genetically wired that way. So I would, if I'm talking to that marketplace, I would ask them specifically what they're looking to change. Because if you say, did you get results, the members of Orange Theory who show up will all say yes. And if you don't believe me, try it. You know, go to the members, go, hey, did you get results? They go, yeah. The bigger question is, what results were you looking for when you enrolled? That's a really different question. So you're going to find a lot of people who say things like, I love the workouts. I've gotten stronger. My energy is so much better. And then you go, what were you looking for when you enrolled? And they say, to lose 18 pounds. Did you lose 18 pounds? No. Now you can make your promise. Do you understand? You can't make the promise to somebody who's not in a state of being compelled. Otherwise, they have no interest. Are you happy at Orange Theory? Yes. Oh, let me tell you what I could do. They don't care what you could do. You've got to get them to the place where they go, I'm interested. So it's not about your perception of what Orange Theory does. It's about their experience. The mismatch is usually between what were you looking for when you enrolled and what did you achieve.
Got it. Okay. That's great.
When you go into a healthy market and you see a couple and the guy is ripped and the woman is lean, they're not wearing Orange Theory shirts. They're wearing, you know, Gold's Gym shirts or even LA Fitness shirts. Orange Theory is a different market than that. So Orange Theory, the people look more like regular people. They're fit, but they're not super lean. They're not really ripped. So if you have somebody and now they want that next level, they're probably not going to get it at Orange Theory because there is no nutritional component and it is purely a metabolic workout. So this is why you have to get clear on the promise, but you also have to know when to throw that promise at your avatar. And the only time you can make the promise is when they're compelled. So if you're reaching into that near-fit market, usually it'll be something about being leaner, you know, being more fit, getting abs, you know, looking like, and they'll name a celebrity. So now that's a whole different approach than chronic disease. So you have to make your promise based on that.
Okay.
Does that help? Sometimes I don't know if I confuse it more or if I give you the clarity. I'm hoping this gave you some clarity.
Yeah, crystal clear. Thank you.
Perfect. Okay. Good. And by the way, as you develop over time, you may find more than one avatar. It's not where I would urge you to start. I think it's best to have one market and master it. But if you have more than one, then of course you would need a different promise for each. Okay, so my suggestion is to invest some time in crafting a promise. And David, you said an offer, not the offer yet. There's two different things. There's a promise and the offer. The promise is what I will do for you. The offer is give me $20 and I'll give you an orientation that will change your life. You know, let me just see something. Kathy mentioned push-ups to pin-ups. I'm going to pull it up right now. Here it is, pushupstopinups.com. All right, so here's their offer. Join our free 6-week weight loss challenge. That's their offer. It's not their promise. It's their offer. Now, it's a strong offer for them because it attracts people. Kathy wants to know why people come. Because in a sense, it's an irresistible offer. I don't know that you guys will believe me. I don't even know that it's even important for me to say this, but I'm going to say it. I was the first one to come up with a slogan, changing or transforming bodies and lives. My first program was called Transform. And then when I did it with an infomercial company, they didn't like that, because I called it physique transformation. Nobody'd ever heard that before. So we changed it to body transformation. So it's just interesting to me now, 30 years later, that I'm seeing these phrases used as commonplace. But this, register for our free 6-week challenge that's helping Concord residents transform their body and life. We use all the resources at our disposal to guarantee your success as long as you put in the work. That's a really weak guarantee. If they were charging $500, they'd need a much stronger guarantee. But it's free. So you see that they're able to pull in the masses because it's compelling. Join our 6-week challenge. We will use all the resources we have to transform your body and your life. Oh, by the way, as long as you put in the work. Now, of course, that's a given, but you see how it weakens the guarantee. So you can make those sorts of guarantees if you have that little kind of safety valve and if you're giving something for free.
Hey, Phil, it's only free if you lose 20 pounds.
Oh, I didn't get to that part yet.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Is that really true?
Yeah. It's a program. It's free, but you have to lose 20 pounds within that time frame.
Well, what happens if you only lose 18 pounds and you have to pay them?
You pay the $299 or $199 or whatever they charge.
Wow, is that a bait and switch?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you sure about that? It says join our free 6-week weight loss challenge.
Unless they changed it into a 6-week free and then you join a membership to keep going. Maybe they changed it, but I know they're
and then here's
successful.
Here's another. They're willing to use the old tried and proven slogans and techniques. These are well overdone, but when you offer things for free, they say consumer alert. Now, again, I would challenge anybody to find this technique done before I used it. I took out an ad in the Yellow Pages. I'm going to think of what year this was. I'm going to really age myself, but it must have been 1990, if not earlier than that. I took out an ad in the Yellow Pages. There was no internet. And I said, how can I, you know, personal training was a little category and there was no listings. Like they tried to sell me personal training, but I thought nobody's going to go looking for that if there's no listings. So I ran my ad under health clubs. And I took the ad space and I said, consumer alert, most health clubs will fail to deliver the result you expect. Before you join any health club, call Phil Kaplan's office. And my phones rang. We must have gotten 20 calls a day from that ad to the point that it was irritating. You know, and I'd hear my assistant going, well, we're not a health club, but let me explain what we do. Well, that's what they've done. They say here, consumer alert, looking for 30 women and men to take our weight loss challenge for free. The truth is it's just purely a hook to get people in their door. So, Kathy, this is why. This is really effective marketing.
Okay.
So you're looking at that, and you're seeing how powerful marketing is. I don't know them well enough to know the outcomes. I don't know them, you know, at all, so I don't know their product. But there's just an example of how marketing works. Now, if you can market, not following their lead, but if you can market in a way that is compelling and you have a strong promise and a bold offer, you don't need the volume they do, but you get a constant stream of people coming to you and saying, here's my money, do what you promised. And if this is different to you than you've heard or thought before, it's because personal trainers aren't exposed to this level of thought process. What I'm sharing with you is marketing, business. Trainers don't get exposed to this. It's just go get clients. But if you really learn your power and you learn your leverage, you could drive a new stream of people to you every single week. And this is why the funnel becomes important. If you just funnel everybody into a workshop, an orientation, a class, a mini seminar, then you're seeing 60, 80 people a month come through your door. Even if it's just you, and that's when you need to hire an apprentice. So this is how you grow. But you need your promise. What is it that you're willing to promise? It's got to be strong. It's got to be consistent. You have to be comfortable with it. And then comes the offer. And the offer has to be irresistible. Now, I'm going to say again what David might have missed because he got disconnected. You can't make an offer and expect a response if they're not compelled. So if you say, where are you working out? And they say, Orange Theory. And you say, are you happy? And they say, yes. And you go, you can come to my event on Tuesday night for $20 with a money-back guarantee. They're not going to come because they just told you they're happy. So I'm encouraging you guys between now and the first of the year to really craft a promise and an offer. And if you're shying away from it because it seems hard, you got to change your mindset because this can change everything for you in the year ahead.
Okay.
By now, you should have mastered the touch. If you haven't, I really don't know how else to help you in that regard. Because if you can't touch people, you can't get clients. I have never met anybody who is not able to touch people. I only meet people who psych themselves out of that. They go, oh, I can't because. And that's the EEM and that's a negative talk monster. So again, within you somewhere, you have to find that willingness. Just to touch. When you get in a conversation, ask the question, you know, where do you work out? I'm using that just as an example. Don't ask everybody that question. I mean, you know, if somebody's very overweight and unfit, they might be offended, so you wouldn't ask that question. But just get into a dialogue and turn it into, here's what I do for a living. Let them tell you how they think you might be able to help them. Compel them, and then throw your promise and your offer. So my suggestion is, for the touch, lock in on two physical places where your market base hangs out. Two. I've mentioned to you that I find Barnes & Noble and Panera to be fantastic places to touch. They're places that people often go by themselves. It's social enough that you're not weird or stalking if you strike up a conversation. And if they're not interested, they let you know. I'm not saying those are the places you should choose, but if I had to choose two places in any city, even if I'd never been there before, somebody said, where are you going to go meet your marketplace? I would say there. Whole Foods is another strong one for me. I just find it easy to strike up conversations. So I would encourage you to choose two places where you can touch people. And just think of it this way. You look at your calendar and you go, come January 1st, I'm going to become more prepared. I'm going to have a promise and an offer. I may not get to drop my offer every single time, but I'm going to have them. I'm going to be so good at making my promise that it just flows. And if they respond to my promise, I'm going to make my offer. But not only am I going to do that, come January 1st, I'm going to make sure that every single week I hit these two places with some frequency and just look for my avatar. I would also create or find one forum of people that you know. Neighbors, relatives, people who have the same interest as you. I mean, people that you know that you can ask come January 1st, who do you know who I can help? This is so very simple. This is so much simpler than trying to do all of these fancy schmancy things, trying to get clients to create flyers and do these campaigns. This is simply just showing up where you know your avatar is, striking up a conversation or two, and watching how people respond to your promise and your offer. You know that the best business source will be referrals, so once you get a new client, that's going to lead to more. But if you're willing to approach 2018 just going out there and seeing what you're capable of, I think you're going to surprise yourself. And I would also, rather than trying to make money on social media right now, I would find one group, one Facebook group, and I would just become a bit of a presence there by posting. Not always posting your promise, just posting so people get to know you. What can you post? You can post yourself making an omelet. I know it seems sort of absurd, but you go, you know what? I would not start the day off without getting the right volume of protein and the right phytochemicals into my body. And I just want to show you guys, here's how I'm doing it. That's it. You don't make a promise, you don't make an offer. But you develop a presence. People watch it. Chris Moore has been a student of mine for many years. He was in my early Be Better groups. And he made a great video that I'll never forget because he took a giant amount of spinach and he was talking, you know, to the camera. And it was just a little post on Facebook. Took a giant amount of spinach, put it in the pan, and within a minute it was just shrunken down. And he was saying, look, if you cook, you know, your spinach into your omelet, look how much nutrients you can get. Would you ever eat this much spinach? This is a great video. So just do little things like that. Only that? No. Show yourself doing a squat curl press with a household item. I know these things seem absurd, or take a little video of you, taking a client through an all-out burst. And not in a fitness group, in your community group. Why? Because you develop a presence. And then maybe every fifth or sixth post, you say something like, I have 3 new openings for clients in 2018. Or I have an event that I'm doing next Tuesday night. I'd love to get some people from the neighborhood who wants to come. Now, if this at all sounds like a lot of work, let me just back up and tell you what I asked you to do. Between now and January 1st, refine your promise, refine your offer. I will continually encourage you to use the discussion board to post your thoughts and ideas. If you go, I'm stuck, I can't think of anything, if you put it up there, you'll probably get some help. If you come up with something, you want to see what we think of it, put it up there, you get some help. So all I'm asking you to do is craft a promise and an offer. They're each one sentence. Secondly, look ahead and say in 2018, there are going to be 2 physical places that I'm going to go prepared with my promise and offer. I'm going to structure one form of people I already know and just let them know that I'm open to taking on new clients. And I'm going to be in one social media group. And again, my suggestion is it shouldn't be a hobby group or a group united by an interest. It should be a community group, your local community. And just develop a presence there. Does that sound like a lot to do? Because I'm promising you this. It'll be really effective if you do it. Who can answer that? Does that sound like a lot to do?
Not at all.
It's not unreasonable.
Is it hard at all?
I don't think it's hard. Just a little bit of time and effort.
Is there something that you guys think might be better just to share with the group? Like as we're heading toward January 1st, does anybody here have any ideas that they think, you know what? I know what's even easier and more effective than what Phil's suggesting. Because honestly, I'm open to it. Okay, so, you know, if you find that to be doable, do it. If you're listening to this and going, sure, of course I can do that. That's nothing. Of course I can do that. Then I'm going to give you a little bit more. A little bit more. After you structure your promise and your offer, come up with 6 points specific to this time of year. Just write them out. You're not going to share the written points with anybody, but just have them at the tip of your tongue so you can use them. For example, find a statistic. The average American gains between 9 and 13 pounds during the holiday season. That would be one. Just find 6 points specific to this time of year so you can just pull them out in conversation. I have some connections, some people that I know well who are in the world of QVC, in the world of marketing, and I know what products are coming out with massive marketing budgets in January. One of the biggest cash buys of ad time is a product that promises to increase growth hormone. So you will start to see the ads in January. I'm going to tell you this. It doesn't increase growth hormone. So, you know, for me, I'm prepared for that. Because I know people are going to be responsive to that. They develop an awareness. So I'm prepared to discuss that with people and tell them exactly what it is and why it doesn't work. So you should come up with 6 points specific to this time of year. So as everybody's frantically looking for the New Year's resolution, you can just pull these out and go, well, let me tell you this about personal training. Well, let me tell you this about Orange Theory. Let me tell you this about push-ups to pin-ups. Just be prepared in your market. Just have 6 points, not that you're going to hand to anybody, just so you're feeling like you're really on and ready to compel people. And in addition to the 6 points, I would have 2 if-then statements. If-then statements are very powerful in changing somebody's mind and helping them see that they're on the wrong course. For example, if you've been on more than 5 diets in your life, then it's likely you have slowed metabolism. man, you plant that seed in somebody who's about to go on a diet, and you watch how twisted their brain gets in that moment. Somebody tell me about this great diet. You eat rice every other day, and you use ginger and turmeric. Oh, really? Do you know, if you've been on more than five diets in your life, it's likely you've already slowed metabolism. It's such a beautiful way to interrupt their thought process because you're not indicting the diet. You're not creating an argument. You're not even pointing a finger at them. But if then stops them short, because now they're about to do what you just said might cause them to move in the wrong direction. And you did it without saying to them, you're making a mistake, you're an idiot. So if you structure these in advance, knowing we're this close to 2018, you become a machine, a marketing machine, and it gets to be fun. You know, if you've been on a program of walking and dieting and you just can't lose weight, then you need a shake-up, and I am just the person to do it. Why is that a great statement? Because they don't know what a shake-up is. So you want to get them compelled? You hang that in front of them. It's like if you had a bag and you go, magic beans are in this bag. They want to look in the bag. So if, then. Listen, if you've given up carbs and cut back on fat and you're still not sure what the right diet is, then you're never going to find the answer unless you spend 90 minutes with me next Tuesday. If, then. Can you guys get a sense of how compelling that could be?
Yeah.
It's almost like saying, if you keep going down that path, then you're going to die. Now, you're not going to really say that, but that's sort of the way you're affecting them. So it's a way of just getting them to go, huh? And look at you and go, well, please, save me. So when Joe Weider said to me, you could have the greatest product in the world, but if you don't market it well, you're going to fail, I became a real student of marketing. And when I look at the tired marketing that is so full circle that it's stuff that I used 30 years ago, then I feel like, okay, let's get to some new stuff that's going to work on an individual level, that's going to get people to respond, and that you're going to be able to deliver in a way that everyone else making these offers will not. And that's what I'm giving you here. And if it seems too simple, please don't mistake this for being so simple it's ineffective. And if it seems too hard, then you need to reevaluate it. Because this is how you can build your business incredibly. Just in the month of January alone, we spoke about one new client a month. You can get 20 in January. Okay, any thoughts, comments, questions about anything at all? When I say anything at all, I mean anything at all. The nutrient value of mung beans?
No, but this call
the sex habits of the butterfly, anything, anything at all, yeah. Go ahead.
This is Darby. I just wanted to say that I do like the webinars. I had technical difficulties. I don't think I've ever communicated on the webinar other than just answering yes or no. So I had a little bit of technical difficulty with when you asked for questions. I wasn't really sure what to do because I'm on my phone watching the webinar.
Okay.
So it wasn't anything personal. It just was I wasn't really sure how to do it on my phone.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. Anything you wanted to share then that you'd like to share now?
No. Okay. But I do like the webinar because I do like the visual.
I know. I thought of you. I think I might have even directed it toward you when I first – what's that?
I get distracted when I'm just listening.
I know. No, and that's – I did think of you when I scheduled those webinars. You know, again, I learned. So I expected that there would be a much livelier discussion, not only on the webinar, just post. I really thought you guys would respond to those three levels. So I learn as I go. But thank you for sharing that.
I'll just say about the three levels, I really enjoyed listening to it. It made me a little depressed.
Let me just look at my list of goals quickly. Number 5, make Darby feel depressed. Okay, good. I could check that one off. Now, why would you feel depressed?
Just because I get disappointed. I'm not where I'm supposed to be.
You understand all of the elements of mindset, right? You understand the EEM, the PFC, the RAS. You understand those things.
Yes, I understand all of this. I just... I get very distracted with everything else going on in my life.
Okay. The first thing you have to do right now is just take a breath and be calm. Are you still here?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And then you have to tell me what outcome you want right now. What is the one that is in the front of your mind is the one you most want?
To be honest, it's not even really about training. I just have so much going on that I can't focus on my training. And
I understand, but what's the outcome? Like, if right now the proverbial genie in a bottle came and said, what would you like? What would it be in relation to your career?
Well, I know that I've said this before and you said I'm not ready. I want to do online training because I want to be able to be home.
So yeah, I don't say you're not ready. You can certainly prove me wrong. What I try to do is I try to assess and I try to give people the best direction possible. Mm-hmm. And I think the way that online anything becomes most effective, unless you are in the career of being an online marketer, I think the way online anything becomes most effective is when you create something that people want. So in other words, if you have 4 amazing success stories from your market, right? Mm-hmm. Women who are moms, everything we spoke about. If you have 4 amazing success stories, and now you create a website or an extension of your website or a presence, and somebody lives in Indiana, and they see that, and they go, Darby, I'd love to train with you, but I live in Indiana. You go, oh, well, I have an online offering. That's the best way to structure it. And now you can roll it out. And now it becomes worth even spending a little bit of money. Because if you remember when I spoke about a level 3, I said if you spend $100 in Facebook marketing and you make $150, now you have a winner. Most people don't do that. Most people spend $100 and make $20. And then they go, oh, look, I made some money. I'll spend another $100. And they're really losing money. So the way to do it is to have something that people will look at and become compelled. Right? And then it's just down to capture thrill. You're getting them at the compel stage. So it's not that you personally are not ready. It's that I don't believe you have enough of a compelling base of ammunition to get
right.
people to go, wow, I want what they got. Right?
Right.
So, and there is a really strong force called creative tension. And you guys may be so tired of hearing me talk about it. But I think you guys know I've worked with companies that generate $100 million a year. I've worked with personal trainers that are just starting out. In every case, creative tension is the key to how fast they grow and how far they go. Because it is, in fact, the momentum that drives them forward. So in order to have creative tension, you have to have 2 points. If you don't have 2 points, you don't have the tension. So point number 1 is where you are. And Darby, what would point number 2 be?
Where I want to be.
Right. So if you don't have those 2, then you flounder. You go in a circle. Distractions get the best of you always, not just you. I'm just saying that's how it goes. So this is why I always bring you back to we got to find that other point. Because otherwise you're in a boat and you don't know where you're going and the distractions keep knocking the boat everywhere. And you go, well, I don't want to be in this boat anymore. I mean, it's okay. I kind of like the ocean, but I'm not really feeling good. And when you tell me there's a beautiful island, I start to get depressed because I'm not getting to the island. So you've got to decide first, you know, where the – and every once in a while, when you get knocked back into the ocean, you may have to reposition. You may have to go, I don't want that island. I decided I want to go to Maine, you know. So until you can articulate what the most compelling outcome for you is – it's really hard for you to get you moving on that course. So if you can say, I want to have online programs that generate for me $70,000 a year, you know, or maybe more. Now we have creative tension. Now there's a gap between where you are and where you want to be. And then we look at milestones. We go, okay, as the example, in order to get there, Darby has to get 4 great testimonials on video, 4 super strong testimonials that represent her market. Now we look at that. We go, okay, in order to get there, Darby has to train at least 4 women with very specific goals and document a before and set a date of the outcome. And if you really break it down, you know, right now Darby has 3 of those women, so she needs to find 1 new client. That's the way that I would work it with you if you were a $100 million company or if you were Darby. The approach, the strategy is the same. So being depressed is sort of wallowing in an emotion that keeps you stuck in that circle. So you've got to look at depressed as the circle of creative tension. I'm standing in it now, but now the way you get out of it is to go, where do I want to get to? And then you do the exercise where you go, let me create all the emotions. And I know when you're depressed, you don't want to do that because you go, oh, no, that's stupid. I'm too depressed. But that's the way you get out of it literally instantly. So for you right now, it's a matter of getting clear on a compelling outcome. And I know your brain wants to go, but my kids and I'm busy and my husband and the work and this and that and everything in the house and the bills. That's the now. So you have to see that as something changeable. That's the power of creative tension. In your mind, you've got to create the true future memory. And it's hard for you. I know it's hard for you. But if you believe in the value of it, that's what you have to do. And if you can come back tomorrow and just post it on the board, or if you can come back on our next call and go, Phil, I'm so clear. You know, I want to have online programs. I want to make whatever the number is. I want my marketplace to be this and that. I only want to work 4 hours a day, or I only want to work 2 days a week. When you could get really clear on that and hold to it, then the distractions just become the distraction monster, and you'll get really good at pushing it out of the way. They won't go away. You'll just be different at dealing with them. They won't lead to depression anymore. They'll lead to inspiration. Does anything I'm saying resonate with you?
Yeah.
Fully, or is there an element of Phil doesn't understand?
No. Okay. I totally feel like you're understanding me.
Good. You know, if this were in fact a perfect world, I would remove you from your circumstance for 1 hour a day and work with you only on mindset. But because we don't have the ability to do that, you can do it.
Thank you.
How long do you exercise every day?
There's no time for me to exercise every day.
How often do you exercise?
Right now I'm not.
When was the last time you did?
I'm trying to figure out how to fit that in. It's been about a month.
It's been a month since?
But when I was training, I have a client that I meet with once a week, and I was training with her. I was working out with her just because I figured she's a kind of a friend also, so I figured I'll just go ahead and work out with her.
Right.
I can at least get, but I just, there's no time for me at all, so I'm trying to figure out how to, that's something I definitely need to fit in back in somewhere.
Yeah. Did you ever do the ideal calendar exercise, or did you just get so fed up with it, just said, I can't do it?
With what? Oh, the calendar exercise? No, I did the calendar, and it's changed, and I didn't stick to it, so I need to redo it. Because my kids, I just don't know how to fit them into my perfect calendar. Because they are still here.
What I can tell you, Darby, is there is a way.
I know there's a way. I am still trying. I haven't given up.
There are some really good psychology studies and a lot to do with mental imagery. And you might have seen some of these. I don't have the references off the top of my head, but there was one where they had basketball players shoot foul shots.
Right.
And they had a control group imagine themselves shooting perfect foul shots.
Uh-huh.
And the control group improved more than the physical group. So think about that. The explanation in simple terms is the physical group didn't always hit the foul shots.
Right.
So they developed a mindset of sometimes I hit and sometimes I miss, and they try to get better, where the visualization group hit every single one, And because they visualize it so strongly, like the future memory, they actually improved more than the other group. Now, that doesn't mean never play basketball and think about it and you'll get better. Clearly, there's a limit to that. But then they did the same thing with piano players. And I don't know how it was tracked, but somehow the visualization group improved more than the other group. And if you're not exercising now, and I'm guessing exercise is very important to you, right?
Yes.
Then I'm going to say for the next week, 10 minutes a day, and I'm not kidding, 10 minutes a day, visualize your perfect outcome. I believe it's more important, and you're hearing this from a guy who prescribes exercise above all, I believe for you it's more important to literally discipline yourself to spend 10 minutes a day uninterrupted visualizing your perfect outcome. And then the following week, figure out how to fit exercise back, even if it's 9 minutes a day. I have a 9-minute routine. You can start with that.
Right.
But you've got to get out of a place of overwhelm. So you need some sort of support. That's why I said if I had an hour with you every day, I'm telling you, we would rewire that whole Darby head.
That's why I said maybe I need, brainwashing or...
No, I don't think you need brainwashing. I think that you need to take ownership, and 10 minutes a day. So I know that you're really busy, and I know that the kids take over your life. I remember when John Spencer Ellis told me he was going to start an adventure boot camp. He didn't call it that, but he said, I'm starting a boot camp for women at 5:30 in the morning. Do you want to buy in? You'll be the East Coast. I'll be the West Coast. I said, John, it's not my thing, but I was intrigued. I said, to me, it sounds crazy that women will get up 5:30 in the morning to work out. He said, I'm telling you, in Orange County, where he lives, he goes, it's the only time they have because the rest of the day is consumed with kids. So it's take care of yourself. And he did it. So mm-hmm. I'm just telling you, there is time for you to find 10 minutes. But it has to be a discipline. You can't go, oh, now I have a free 10 minutes. I have to go pay this bill. Now I have a free 10 minutes. I have to send this email. Now I have a free 10 minutes. I have to make cookies. It's got to be, 8 o'clock every day or 5:30 every morning or wake up in the middle of the night if you have to. But for 1 week, discipline yourself 10 minutes to really visualize your perfect outcome. And in a week, tell us what it is. And then we'll get you there. But you got to stay the course. All right? So if my...
Yep.
Webinars, you enjoyed them because there was a visual, but you hated them because they made you depressed. Maybe it led us to this point that we realize you need some neural rewiring, right?
I didn't hate them. I just was saying that was my feedback on it.
No, I didn't say you hated them. I said you liked them. I thought if I didn't say that, that's what I meant. Yeah.
You said
you liked the webinars.
I hated them because of the visual, but I hated them because they made me depressed. I didn't.
Oh, okay, okay.
And it was just the last one that I – just started, doing too much self-reflection.
All right, well, then you know it. When you say too much, then you know it was too much.
Yeah.
Okay, so start that exercise today. Just 10 minutes. You got to get clear on the outcome. Then we have creative tension. Then you can start moving forward.
All right, thank you very much. Yes, thank you.
Okay. I believe in you, Darby. I know that the great emergence is in your future. I'm anxious to see it happen.
I know. Thank you.
All right. Anyone else, any thoughts for Darby or any thoughts, comments, questions about anything at all? All right, guys. Then I hope you will follow through on what we spoke about today. And until we speak again, am I going to talk to you guys before Christmas? I don't know when our next call is. I'm not in front of a calendar. Well, enjoy the season. Enjoy the holidays. Enjoy the networking. Enjoy the brainstorming. Enjoy the creation of the promise and the offer. And let's head toward a great and amazing 2018. Until we speak again, be better, everybody. Bye-bye.